back, steps up, heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone, and Mix makes the catch for the touchdown. He went up with the big hands and caught it on the Hail Mary.
Boots one, returnable for Williams from his own 20. Lost the ball,
and the Giants say they have it. They do. Devin Thomas recovered it, but the rookie Jaquan Williams punched it out.
Manning out of the shotgun set, he's back to throw. Climbs the pocket, deep ball down the left sideline, and it's going to be caught. Was he inbounds?
Yes. Manningham on the sideline.
Brady's under pressure. Brady's chased. Brady heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone. A jump ball, and it's incomplete, and the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
Now, here's your host, Lance Meadow.
And a good Tuesday morning for you here, December 18th, 2012. So glad you could join us here on Big Blue Kickoff, Giants.com. Lance Meadow with you. You can chime in on the conversation on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. You can interact with me personally at Lance Meadow, M-E-D-O-W, the last name. We'll also be taking your phone calls over the next hour. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number as the Giants now turn their attention to the Baltimore Ravens, a team that has lost three games in a row for the first time since 2005. So you have two teams looking to bounce back from dismal performances this past weekend as the Ravens got down early to the Denver Broncos 31-3, wound up falling 34-17 in the Giants. You know the story, 34-0 at the hands of the Atlanta Falcons. But it's clearly simple for the Giants. You win two games and you clinch a playoff spot. Destiny is still in their hands. They can control it. But they've got to go out and play consistent football. That's the bottom line. And it's Baltimore on the road this weekend, followed by a home game against the Eagles to close out the season. They don't have to worry about any mathematical equations. And I know a lot of Giants fans are thinking, well, maybe there's a way they could still win the division. They need the Bears and the Vikings to lose. Giants fans, you don't need to make it that complex. It's staring right in front of the Giants. Just win two games. That's all they need to do. You don't need any help at this point. And Tom Coughlin talked about that yesterday. It's a good position to be in. Yes, the loss to the Falcons hurts. There's still a lot of question marks surrounding this team. But after a day's rest and a day to digest what went wrong against Atlanta, there's now a new day to get back on track. And they'll now be focusing on a team that has struggled defensively. When you look at Baltimore's rankings, they are 25th overall. They're 26th against the run. They're giving up over 132 yards on the ground. They're giving up over 242 yards through the air. They are using fourth-string corners, fifth-string safeties, seventh-string linebackers. This team has been absolutely decimated by injuries. And they also may have lost one of their top deep threats in Torrey Smith, who suffered a concussion in the loss to Denver on Sunday. They lost one of their top linebackers in Jameel McClain. He's now out for the season with a spinal contusion. So they are continuing to hurt. And Joe Flacco and the offense has been inconsistent this season. They just changed offensive coordinators. Cam Cameron was fired last week. Former Colts head coach Jim Caldwell is now calling the plays. It will be interesting to see how that offense progresses during the course of this week, whether or not they throw any new wrinkles into play as they prepare to go up against the Giants. But everybody talks about, well, the Giants are in the perfect position because they need to bounce back. They're hurting. But don't forget, the Ravens are hurting as well. And the Ravens have a lot of motivation in play, given the fact that they're struggling for the first time in nearly 7 years. I mean, usually they're controlling the tempo and the tone in the AFC North. The division has not been wrapped up. And number three, there's a lot of question marks surrounding the future of the team in terms of what they want to do with respect to the personnel. So there's a lot of factors that would lead you to believe that Baltimore, even though they've clinched the playoff spot, is not ready to lay down and just limp into the postseason. And the Giants clearly have plenty of factors to play for, given that they have not locked anything up. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We will be joined at 10 a.m. by Jeff Zeribek of the Baltimore Sun, the Ravens beat writer. He'll help preview the matchup. We'll get his perspective on what to expect from this Ravens squad as they get set to go head-to-head with the Giants. And just a quick side note, remember, the game Sunday was flexed. It was originally supposed to kick off at 1. It has now been moved to 4:25. So for those of you making plans on Sunday, it's It's a little bit later kickoff for those two teams. All right, we're going to open up the phone lines. We're going to hope that we worked out Monday's kinks, that everything is back up and running. We've had this entire Giants staff test out the lines. We've had the phone company arrive on the scene. In the event things, though, do not work out, if I toss it to you, I throw it to you, immediately start talking. You are on the air. We just won't have an opportunity to interact. But we're hoping, we're keeping our fingers crossed. We start with Dion in Hofstra. All right, Dion from Hofstra. Dion, what's happening?
Nothing, man. I'm worried. Feels like the magic is gone from last year. Looking for Eli to come up in these, you know, these big situations. But I'm not, I don't, you know, I really don't find too much with Eli. I think that Kevin Gilbride's play calling of running the ball twice and then, you know, third down running a vertical. And the fact that, you know, these receivers, you know, don't go for these balls. Like, you watch these receivers for the Patriots, for the Saints and other teams, you know, they dive for these balls, to go for these balls. You have guys like Nix and Cruz, who seems like he's afraid to get hit. And then Bennett's still developing. Like, you know, these guys don't seem to – these receivers to me seem like they're playing selfish football. And then Eli seems like he's just – like, he doesn't have it this year. Like, you know, he looked like such a magician out on the field last year. And this year it seems like that's gone. And I'm worried.
Well, Eli Manning, you're right, has not looked the same as he did last season. And you mentioned that the receivers haven't been that aggressive. And I'll give you that. I buy the fact that, you know, they have not been able to bail out the quarterback at times. But if you're to utilize the examples from this past Sunday's game, Dion, I think it's more with Eli Manning's decision-making. There were times where he missed Akeem Nix. There were times where he underthrew Victor Cruz and Martellus Bennett. So clearly, the receivers and the quarterback are not on the same page. And I thought, coming off the bye week, given how well they performed against the Packers, that some of those issues were solved. Unfortunately, the issues have now come back to the forefront, and they're going to have to continue to work out some of those kinks as they move forward for the next two games. But Eli Manning, the Giants are at the point where you can't rely on him pulling a fourth quarter comeback out of his back pocket. It's just not going to happen. And that's why there needs to be more pressure on the running game being more consistent and the team as a whole, specifically the offensive line, winning the physical battle at the line of scrimmage. We may be past the day, specifically this season, and Dion, appreciate the phone call, where the Giants can rely on their passing game bailing out this team. I mentioned in weeks prior, turnovers have overshadowed some of the defensive inefficiencies, and special teams field position has overshadowed some of the offensive inefficiencies. But if you don't get favorable field position and you don't get the turnovers to pile, somebody else needs to step up to the plate and deliver. And if you don't feel as if Eli Manning is going to be able to put together these magical drives, and yes, he's had a rough stretch, but that doesn't mean that he can't come through in the clutch in these next two games. But you need to go based on the platform of games that we've been looking and observing at the last couple of weeks. And based on that trend, they need to find other options. And if that means getting Martellus Bennett more heavily involved, that's one option. If it means dumping it off to Henry Hynoski or utilizing him in the running game, that's another option. Or perhaps the return of Ahmad Bradshaw this week, if he's healthy enough to get out there. Still nursing that sprained knee, and he did tell reporters this week that he's optimistic he'll get out there, but you never know with knee injuries. That should help in terms of giving Eli Manning more time to throw the football. He was a little bit off key. I'm not going to sit here and make excuses. But part of it also was the fact that Atlanta did a very good job getting to the quarterback. Now, Chris Snead was banged up. He's nursing a hip injury. That's another question regarding the offensive line. But if the protection is better, which it has been throughout the course of this season, it's not as if Eli Manning has been on the floor time and time again. But any good quarterback who constantly sees pressure and is flustered, their throws are going to be affected. So that's why priority number one moving forward. And Baltimore has not been great at getting to the quarterback throughout the course of this season. As long as the protection schemes are where they're supposed to be, and if that means relying on Lumpkin a little bit more on third downs or the return of Bradshaw, then that's what the Giants need to do. I know David Wilson provides a spark, and he's a dynamic running back, and he's shown flashes of that the last 2 weeks. And I'm not saying that they need to lessen his load, but clearly they've been struggling with Wilson in there based on the assignments that he needs to pick up whether it be a linebacker or a corner, to give Eli Manning more time. The perfect example is that interception early in the Falcons game. You know, that set the momentum the way of the Falcons. That early pick gives the Falcons tremendous field position. They cash it in. Once again, a slow start for the Giants. The Falcons get that early 7-0 lead. They never look back. The Giants have struggled overall when they get off to slow starts. That's why you've got to protect the ball early, and you've got to win the physical battle at the line. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We go to Hugo in New Jersey. Hugo, what's happening?
Hey, good morning, Lance. You make some great points. You know, watching other games around the league, actually, I think the Giants are the team that throws to the running backs less than any other team. You know, with Wilson, I'd actually like to see him dust off the old Tiki Barber playbook, you know, where he's beating linebackers coming out of the backfield and taking some passes. I think he is a pretty good receiver. But the reason I call is really about the defense. You know, I think you're right. With the next two opponents, things are setting up correctly. But unless we stop the run, I mean, you know, Ray Rice and the running backs of Philadelphia, whether McCoy plays or not, you know, they're going to rack up like 200 yards. And I just, I mean, I really look at the Giants defense. Defense is a lot about attitude, especially stopping the run. And I think the scheme we run is just a very gimmicky, right? I mean, I think when I was watching the game against Atlanta, first of all, the linebackers are off the line of scrimmage, and typically there's two linebackers in the game, which suggests we're playing a three-safety package. Now, if I'm a quarterback, I go up to the line of scrimmage, I see that, and I audible to a run. Plain and simple, and that's exactly what happened on that first drive. You know, it's a good scheme against certain teams like the Green Bay Packers, where your front can control their offensive line. I was surprised that we actually couldn't control the offensive line of Atlanta, but if it's not working, I think, you know, you got to get three linebackers in there, get stout, and shoot gaps and, you know, and blow up the running game. You just can't sit back on your heels and have people get to the second level and block your linebackers.
Hugo, I was just going to say, and I think that's a valid point. I think part of why maybe they went to that safety alignment and you didn't see as many linebackers, number one, some of the linebackers are still hurt, and number two, they were trying to make up for the loss of Prince Amukamara and Kenny Phillips. But you're right. At this point, given how they have consistently struggled in stopping the run, there's got to be a point that you reach when you say, it's not working, we've got to change up the scheme, or we've got to get our linebackers in better position to fill those gaps, attack the holes, and prevent the Ray Rices of the world and the LeSean McCoys from running wild. Because I agree with you, Hugo. If I'm Jim Caldwell this week, the new Ravens offensive coordinator, I'm telling Joe Flacco, my ideal game plan is to have you throw the football 17 to 18 times, and my ideal plan is to have Ray Rice have the ball 25 to 27 times. That's exactly what Baltimore's thinking right now. How could they not? Every running back that has gone up against the Giants has had a field day on the ground.
And Lance, I mean, talk about gimmicks. I mean, you know, the NASCAR package, it all sounds fancy, but really, I mean, Justin Tuck's a shadow of himself. I mean, what you really need to do here is, I think, put the bigger guys in the middle to rush the passer, collapse the pocket from within, generate some power. I mean, Kiwanuka, he's more like a lanky defensive end type. He needs space to generate a passer. He's not going to ball, a guard or a center back into the quarterback. So what I'm seeing is, you know, Umanyora comes off the edge, right, and he creates that pressure, makes the quarterback step up, but he has a clean pocket in the middle. It's not collapsing. I would really ditch the NASCAR package and just rotate my defensive ends so they're rested, generate the pass rush from the edge, and rotate the defensive tackle, see if we can get a push up the middle with Canty, Bernard, Joseph. Hey, I may even activate Austin just for that purpose. I hope he can at least do one thing, take a good first step, if that's what he's known for, burst through there and see if he could generate some pressure up the middle.
All right, Hugo, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much. With respect to Marvin Austin, and we have talked about this in prior weeks, let's put this in perspective here for a second. Marvin Austin has been a healthy scratch the last couple of weeks, and that leads me to believe that the Giants coaching staff is seeing something in practice as to why Marvin Austin is not out there. And Austin was a high pick, a lot of potential, if you recall, coming out of college, even though he missed his senior year, had the torn pectoral muscle last season, still a tremendous talent that you would think the Giants would want to utilize. But the fact that he's not hurt and he's a healthy scratch leads me to believe that the coaching staff is seeing something during practice and that's why he's not out there. So I don't know the type of option that Marvin Austin will present at this point, given that we're already at week 16 and he hasn't made a huge contribution. But what I will take away from the point that Hugo was alluding to was not necessarily the defensive ends and not necessarily moving Mathias Kiwanuka in multiple positions, though I would make the point he's more effective when he's got his hand in the ground and he's on the line. And I think Perry Fuel has tried to put him in ideal situations like that to get him going, but due to the injuries to the linebacker core, it doesn't always play out that way. But the defensive tackle position is the key to getting this pass rush going. Everybody talks about JPP hasn't shown up, OC hasn't shown up, and Justin Tuck hasn't shown up. And I'm not going to sit here and make excuses for those three guys. The production hasn't been where it was last season, and there's no signs that it's all of a sudden going to click the way it did last season that will enable them to go on a six-game winning streak or whatever and get to another Super Bowl. Now, things can change drastically over the course of a week. That's the life of the NFL. But assuming that doesn't, the Chris Canty's of the world and the Linval Joseph need to win their individual battles, because if the defensive ends are getting explosiveness off the edges, even if they're not getting to the quarterback, you want to collapse the inside of the pocket. And Canty did have a sack the last game, but it's coming in spurts. There's no consistency there. And I thought once Canty came back and was activated from the pup list, he could be the OC Umenyiora of last season. The defensive player that returns and boom, all of a sudden everything falls into place. Unfortunately, the script has not been followed exactly as the Giants planned it out. But that doesn't mean that Linval Joseph and Chris Canty can't all of a sudden win their individual battles. I like the matchup against the Baltimore offensive line. Joe Flacco's been sacked 34 times. That's up there with the Green Bay Packers in terms of the most among active quarterbacks. This is an ideal matchup that the Giants should be able to bully around the Ravens' offensive line. And I'm going to talk about that with Jeff Zeribek at the top of the hour, the Ravens beat writer, because I want to see how this Ravens offensive line, from his perspective, has struggled during the course of the season, and perhaps that's a reason why Baltimore has been up and down. We'll get his perspective in about 10 minutes. But this is a juicy matchup, and then the Philly offensive line has also had trouble in protecting the quarterback. So if you're the Giants, you could have not asked for two better matchups for your defensive line to get things going as you try to make a playoff run. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We go to Yolanda in Virginia. Yolanda, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well, you know, Yolanda. What you got?
All I want to say is I know New York is the Giants. They're a great team. The city is resilient. So I really expect the team to be resilient and to come back and do what they need to do. So even if they don't win a ring, they can at least make it to the Super Bowl, because that's just how New York is.
All right, Yolanda, appreciate the phone call. And what she's alluding to is basically how they performed last season. And Tom Coughlin also brought this up yesterday, because the reporters were constantly asking him about the pressure of now having to win two games, the similarities to last season, the bad loss in week 15, if you recall, to the Redskins, and then all of a sudden regrouping, beating the Jets on Christmas Eve, and then beating the Cowboys the following week, wrapping up the division and riding that momentum into the playoffs. And I threw this out on Sunday during the pregame show. Part of what makes the Giants so dangerous, and it's frustrating for Giants fans, the unpredictability of this team. The fact that you don't know what team is going to show up makes them dangerous. Because how hard is it for the opposition to game plan for a team that could be explosive on offense one week and then can turn the ball over three times the next week, can be opportunistic on defense one week and can give up huge chunks of yardage and big plays the following week? It's been up and down and up and down throughout the course of this season. So it's a guessing game for opposing offensive and defensive coordinators in how you go about attacking the Giants. And it would not surprise me, based on the trends of this season, if the Giants come out on Sunday and play one of their best performances. And I don't think there's a Giant fan out there that would be surprised as well, given the script that they followed this year. That's just Giants football. They like to make it interesting. They like to make it exciting. The NFL loves it. Giants fans don't necessarily love it. But that's just this type of team. It's hard for them to put stretches together where they can go on an 8-game winning streak and keep the level of consistency up. Unfortunately, due to injuries, I think that's been one contributing factor as to why this team has been so up and down. Number two, Hakeem Nicks's injury most notably has affected the offense as a whole. Eli Manning is not playing at the level in which he played all of last year. And that doesn't mean that he's killing the team, remember. And I know we took a lot of phone calls yesterday. And maybe this was just Giants fans overreacting, hitting the panic button. But I'm going to bring this up as a side note. And I'm not here to rip the other team that plays in New York. But if you watched last night's game against the Tennessee Titans, if Giants fans were to choose between Mark Sanchez and Eli Manning, you've got to be thankful for the quarterback, Giants fans, that you have under center. Because at the end of the day, whether you have the Eli Manning that struggles at times or you have the good Eli Manning, you always have a chance to win a football game. Other teams, and I'm not trying to beat down on the Jets here, even other teams that have questions at quarterback, they don't necessarily have that position to fall back on throughout the course of this season. But the Jets are in the situation they are right now because there's no stability at that position. The Giants, on the other hand, have plenty of stability at that position. All right, we want to try to squeeze in some calls here before we have the interview at the top of the hour. We go to Steve in D.C. Steve, what's happening?
Hey, what's happening, guys? Oh, wow. Tough loss. I don't even really know where to start. I have so much to say, but I'll just start at the top and work my way down, and I'll listen off air because, like everybody else, that was just a hard one to swallow, guys. I tell you. You know, I saw Tommy Coughlin in an interview yesterday making excuses, talking about how the players were could have had their minds on the tragedy in Connecticut. You know, give me excuses about what we did to Atlanta last year, you know, in the playoffs. And I don't like, you know, I personally, you know, I would like to see a little bit more urgency coming from Tom Coughlin. I feel like he's a little bit too comfortable, and the players are a little bit too comfortable. The decision-making from Eli, it needs to be addressed. And I like all of the fans. I would not trade Eli for anybody else, right? Well, I won't see anybody else. I'm just happy we have Eli right now, but the decision-making needs to be addressed. In my opinion, he is killing us. You know, and I'll just keep going down. As far as the play call yesterday, I still feel like we're calling plays that, like, we're scared. And we're not imposing our will by staying consistent, running the ball. You know, I mean, I don't understand why we have to throw a long bomb every time somebody scores on us. The first play, so predictable, first series, we're throwing a bomb. I just don't understand that. As far as the NASCAR package, it's only built for when we're ahead, guys. That's it. When we're ahead, it's great. But when we're trying to stop the run, when teams are consistently running the ball down our throats, it's just completely ineffective, and change definitely needs to be made. Justin Tuck needs to be taken off captain status and maybe brought off the bench and let some of these young guys get some playing time. And I'll listen off air. I'm, you know, very disgusted. I bleed blue all day, but changes need to be made. I would like to see Austin brought back in off the inactive list. I think these young guys do have something to contribute, and it seems that we only want to play who we pay. And when we're somebody due for a contract or possibly contract, we don't let them shine because we want to get them under contract next year. And, you know, quite frankly, only thing I can really say is consistent is Jerry Reese. I think he's done a fabulous job. We have all the pieces. I believe we'll beat Baltimore. Don't know what we'll do with Philly because their running game scares me. So let's go, Big Blue, guys. I'll listen off air, but I'm not a very happy camper today, guys.
All right, Steve, appreciate the phone call and completely understand the perspective that you're bringing to the table. And like many other Giants fans, they're frustrated because of the way the team performed against the Atlanta Falcons, and everything looked like it was laid out for the Giants to perform at an extremely high level, given the fact that Atlanta was one of the top teams in the NFC and the Giants knew that they had an opportunity to still control their own destiny. But we could talk about the past all we want, but right now that's not going to do anything. The Giants right now need to focus on how they can tweak things, how they can change things. And the NASCAR package being more effective when you're up, understandable. You could take more chances in terms of your blitz packages when you have a comfortable lead, because – you're okay with potentially giving up a big play, as opposed to when the game is tighter, you can't afford to give up some of those big plays. So I think that comes into the game plan as to why the NASCAR package hasn't been as effective. And Perry Fuel was honest with reporters, and part of it was, I think, him just defending his players when he said, I did not put a lot of my guys in position to get sacks. He was referring to the Saints game. And the sacks were not piling up against the Atlanta Falcons. The pass rush has been very up and down this season. But as I mentioned earlier in the show, they've got the personnel to win individual battles. And as we've seen in past seasons, it's been able to click in the blink of an eye. And this is a Ravens team that has enabled Joe Flacco to be sacked 34 times. Perhaps, at least on paper, it could be the matchup where the pass rush starts to click and the Giants can use that and build off of that in the final two games to perhaps get a playoff run. But they're not going to do it on paper. They've got to do it on the football field, and I can understand why many Giants fans are frustrated. We're going to get to more of your phone calls a bit later on in the show, but right now we're going to take a break. We're going to switch gears to previewing the Ravens-Giants game this Sunday, and we welcome in to Big Blue Kickoff Jeff Zarebek of the Baltimore Sun, the Ravens beat writer. Jeff, appreciate the time. Lance Meadow here on Big Blue Kickoff. How's everything?
Good, Lance. How are you?
Doing well, Jeff, and certainly appreciate you giving us some time this morning to help preview the upcoming matchup. After Sunday's loss to the Broncos, Jeff, Joe Flacco had said we're a 9-5 football team, but it feels like we're 0-14. So despite backing into the playoffs as the Steelers lost to the Cowboys, how would you describe the mindset of the players as they enter this Giants game?
Maybe desperate is a little strong, but, you know, they're pretty frustrated. You know, they were sitting at 9-2 3 weeks ago, and all the talk was could they get a, you know, a top seed and a first-round bye. Now here they are still fighting to win the division. They've three straight weeks they've had a chance to clinch the division with a victory and some help, and three straight weeks they've lost. So, you know, I think, you know, maybe them clinching the playoffs, and, you know, sure, they backed in, but maybe them clinching the playoffs will take a little pressure off them. But they've been a bad road team all year, and they know they need to, you know, to do anything in the playoffs, I think they understand they need to have at least one home game. And, you know, they do that, they have to clinch the division. So I don't think it took, you know, there's still a lot on the line for them this week. Maybe not as much as the Giants because the Ravens are already in. But, you know, they want to win the AFC North. That's been one of their goals. And, you know, they need one more victory to do it. And so far, it's just, you know, they haven't been able to get it. And it's just a matter of they're losing games. Last week was just a complete blowout where their home fans were booing them. And, you know, the place was empty by the middle of the fourth quarter, which is very rare. And then the previous 2 weeks, they lost in last-second field goals in games they couldn't put away. So, you know, I think it's fair to say frustration is pretty high in Baltimore.
This has been a team that's been fairly consistent the last couple of seasons in terms of getting to the playoffs. Given that the fans were leaving early and that the fan base is starting to turn, does that seem to be taking a toll on the players overall, or at least the coaching staff? Has that been addressed throughout the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, you know, I don't think necessarily the booing. They're not used to it, but, you know, they've been in the playoffs five straight years. It's the longest streak in football. So, you know, that's something to be proud of. I mean, there's nothing you can do to diminish that. But they had bigger goals this season. You know, this was their goal was not just to make the playoffs. I know that's where it starts. But they've been frustrated about their inability to, you know, advance and go to the Super Bowl like the Giants have, you know, twice recently. So, and this was supposed to be a good chance to do it, and they looked in good shape. But the kind of the, you know, everyone knows, you know, yeah, they've seen the Giants do it. The Packers did it 2 years ago. But you have to be playing well to kind of make that run. And they keep saying everything's ahead of us. You know, our goals are right in front of us. All we need to do is win. But they're not playing well enough to win football games, and they're not playing well enough to beat good teams, and they're really not playing well enough to beat mediocre to bad teams right now. It's just kind of the defense is really banged up, and the offense has totally lost all sense of rhythm. So I think the, you know, as I said, the prominent emotion in the Ravens facility these last couple of weeks is just frustration at, you know, it seems like one of those things where everything that could have gone wrong has gone wrong.
And, Jeff, speaking of the offense, I was looking over Flacco's numbers from last season, and through 14 games this year, his stats are nearly identical, yet it just seems that the level of play isn't where it was last year. Clearly, many of the so-called experts saying that he's regressed. So what has been his biggest issue this season on offense?
Yeah, I would say his season's best described as uneven. If you looked at it early, I mean, he tore up some pretty good teams, and at home, their offense was unstoppable for much of the season. But, you know, they try to pride themselves on peaking at the right time and going in December and playing good football, but he's going the other way. There's been several problems. His accuracy hasn't been what it's been in the past. He's having trouble hanging on to the ball, you know, recently. He had 6 turnovers by himself in the last 3 games, and 3 of them are on fumbles. You know, his pocket presence hasn't been there. So it's kind of the perfect storm, and, you know, I think it's fair to say that Joe Flacco has regressed. This was supposed to be the year that he kind of, you know, took off, that they became more of an offensive team this year. He had another year of familiarity with his receivers. You know, they were putting more on the offense this year. They went to the no huddle a lot more, but it hasn't worked out. The offensive coordinator was fired last week, and now they're in a situation where they're, you know, they just need Flacco to wake up and start getting some rhythm. He just looks, you know, he looks like he's playing with very little confidence right now. He's banged up. The offensive line isn't doing much to support him, and it's, as I said, there's not a whole lot right going offensively, but they feel like they do have the personnel to break out a little. They just need to get going, but they haven't been able to find that rhythm.
Talking with Jeff Zarebek of the Baltimore Sun, covers the Baltimore Ravens, and you mentioned that Cam Cameron was fired last week, so Jim Caldwell, the former Colts coach, takes over as offensive coordinator. How much did the offense change at all, Jeff, against the Broncos, given that there was a new play caller?
Not a whole lot. I mean, they simplified some things. There was a couple plays, different in there that they hadn't been running necessarily. But they had so few days to prepare for the Broncos. It's the same playbook. So they didn't really do a whole lot different. You know, I think eventually when they work up to it and you give Jim Caldwell some time, I think you'll see them run no huddle more, be a little quicker offensively. But the situation has to be right, too. I mean, last week, you know, everyone talked about how they were going to play faster and they were going to run more no huddle, but you're also playing Peyton Manning. So the quicker you run on offense, the quicker you're giving him the ball back, and they didn't want to do that either. So last week I don't think was a very good indication of what we'll see going forward, but you know, I think they're trying to simplify things for Joe Flacco. They're trying to get more input from the players and the other coaches into the game plan. And that was one of the biggest criticisms for Cam Cameron. It was almost like, this is the way I'm doing it, and this is the way we're doing it. Now they're trying to, give Flacco more input on the plays and give the other coaches more input. And they're kind of simplify some things for Joe Flacco. And if they're playing well, they'd really like to move, you know, play no huddle. And that's when Joe Flacco has been at its best. But the situation just hasn't called for it recently. And Joe Flacco, frankly, hasn't played well enough to justify to them doing that.
And there's been a lot of chatter throughout the course of this season, specifically from Ray Rice. He's voiced some frustration with the offense, wanting the ball more. And you look at this matchup, Jeff, throughout the course of the season, the Giants have struggled stopping the run, and I can't think of a better opportunity to go heavy on the run if you're Baltimore. So how do you think the Ravens are going to attack the Giants, given how New York has struggled in stopping the ground game throughout the course of this year?
I think you'll see a lot more. I think you'll see a lot of Ray Rice this week. I mean, he only had 41 yards of total offense, last week, and Broncos have a very good defense, obviously, but they need to get him the ball more. John Harbaugh at his press conference yesterday voiced a frustration that we're just not run blocking well enough, and that's my biggest concern here. He was trying to take some pressure off Flacco and let everyone know, look, there's bigger issues here too. And B, I think he's trying to send a message that, look, we need to run the ball. We need to block better. I mean, Ray Rice was getting no holes, not much of an opportunity to do anything. His backup was concussed. Bernard Pierce was concussed in the game. Their fullback is limited with an ankle sprain. So I think there's other factors that go into it, but I think the Ravens know they're going to need to run the ball this week. I was listening to your show, and I know you know, the Giants' pass rush hasn't been what it normally was at times. But the Ravens' offensive line has struggled, especially with speed rushers on the outside. So they're going to need to slow those guys down a little, and a good way to do that, obviously, would be get the ball in Ray Rice's hands.
And you talked earlier, Jeff, about the offensive line struggles. I threw out the numbers. Joe Flacco's been sacked 34 times. The Broncos had 3 sacks. They hurried him 9 times. There was a lot of movement in the offseason where they were trying to aggressively pursue some players, bring them back a little too late. Are they starting to see that they're paying the price for maybe not being as aggressive as they should have been in keeping that offensive line together during the offseason?
Yeah, they'll never admit it, but yeah, you know, Ozzie Newsome gets a lot of credit around here, and there's a lot of people who have a lot of respect for good reason. He's done a great job. He's been an architect of an organization that is perennial in the playoffs, so you got to give him your credit for that. But he said their first order of business in the offseason was trying to upgrade the offensive line. It just wasn't good enough, and they made a couple moves, but it's not – the group is kind of regressed as the season has gone on. So that has not been an upgraded group, and I think the front office has to wear some of that because it's – you know, they tried to sign Bobby Williams, a veteran. He's kind of, you know, he's on the downside of his career, really not a starting caliber player. You know, they drafted Azamele, who's been playing right tackle. I think he's going to be pretty good, but, you know, throwing a rookie at right tackle, you know, isn't, you know, you're gonna go through some growing pains there. And they moved Michael Orr to left tackle. He's better on the right side. Center Matt Burke is kind of not the player he used to be. You know, they have a second-year tackle playing left guard. And now their best lineman, right guard Marshall Yanda, who's a starter in the Pro Bowl last year, is, you know, out with a high ankle sprain. So, you know, his status is iffy for the Sunday. He missed this past week, and it clearly showed. You know, they let Pro Bowler Ben Grubbs go. He's obviously with the Saints playing pretty well. There's some miscalculations there, I'd say, and it's really hurt him. I mean, some of it's on Joe Flacco because he's held on to the ball too long, and that's been a big criticism. He doesn't feel the pressure and step up in the pocket. But a lot of it, too, is on the offensive line, especially in that Broncos game. There were plays where Joe Flacco didn't stand a chance.
Talking with Jeff Zeribek of the Baltimore Sun, covers the Baltimore Ravens, kind enough to give us some time this morning here on Big Blue Kickoff. Another notable injury, Torrey Smith suffered a concussion in Sunday's loss to the Broncos. He's really been able to stretch the field for Flacco. I know it's still early in the week and they're not yet practicing, but how bad did the concussion look? What do you think the chances he'll be out there Sunday against the Giants?
Tough to predict because, I mean, you know, he's obviously going to have to pass all the baseline testing and all that, and we haven't seen him or talked to him really. I mean, after Sunday's game, he kind of joked it off a little bit and joked that, yeah, he couldn't remember. The good part was he couldn't remember the game, you know, that they just played. But I don't know. It would be interesting to see. They'll go through all the precautions with Torrey Smith. It didn't look good at the time. His head hit the turf. He tried to get up, and he kind of stumbled and but later in the game, I mean, he was arguing, they took away his helmet, but he was arguing to go back in the game. I think by the end of the game, he felt like he had made some improvements and he was doing okay. So that one's hard to predict, you know, because you don't know how someone's going to respond to those symptoms. But I'm sure the Ravens will play cautious with them. And, you know, they need him on the field. I mean, he's their best deep threat. It's an offense that has been criticized in the past for not having that much speed. And there's not a whole lot of guys in the NFL that can match his speed. So they need him on the field.
Especially with the fact that the Giants' secondary is also hurting, so that could be an opportunity for the Ravens to take advantage. Want to switch gears to defense. You mentioned earlier that this is a Ravens defense that has been absolutely decimated by injuries, and now they lose Jameel McClain, one of their top linebackers, who's out for the season due to a spinal contusion. They rank 26th against the run, 22nd against the pass. Jeff, what is the strength of this defense at this point?
Their calling card, which isn't always necessarily a good thing, is their red zone defense, because there are other teams getting in the red zone an awful lot. But they, heading into the Denver game, they had the number one ranked red zone defense in football, and, you know, forcing a lot of field goals and keeping teams out of the end zone. They weren't as successful doing that against Denver. So, you know, they haven't stopped the run on a consistent basis. They've gotten to the passer at times, but not on a consistent basis. The coverage and communication has been poor in the secondary. So there's really not been many strengths to that group, especially, you know, obviously in Baltimore, they're used to having a pretty dominant defense. They've been among the top 10 in the league for years, and this is probably one of their worst defenses in years. Actually, there's no probably about it. It's just not been a good group. And lately, it's just been decimated by injuries. Against Denver, four of their five top tacklers were out. You know, Terrell Suggs is playing with one arm and one leg because he has the Achilles tear and the bicep tear. Ray Lewis could be back this week, but they're not sure about that. Haloti Ngata, the Pro Bowl defensive tackle, is playing with shoulder and knee injuries that really have rendered him, you know, not even close to the player he's used to being. So even the guys that are out there, you know, are banged up and really not at full strength. And, you know, we'll have to see what improvements some of these injured guys make, but they badly need reinforcements on that defense because, I mean, last week they started, an undrafted free agent who had never started a game in his career at inside linebacker, you know, and he was the one wearing the headset, you know, to call in the plays. And, I mean, this is a rookie who's never really played, you know, and going against Peyton Manning. So it's not been a very good situation. They keep saying we need to get better, but the only way I see them getting better is getting better personnel, and I'm just not sure the injured guys are going to be able to come back this week.
Jeff, before we let you go, from a mental perspective, clearly the Ravens are hurting. They've lost three in a row. The Giants coming off one of their worst losses in two seasons to the Atlanta Falcons. The Ravens have struggled at times on the road, but they will have the home fan base behind them. Do you see any team having an edge, given that they're really entering this contest from similar situations?
That's a great question. You know, I don't necessarily know. I mean, the Giants, I think, may have a big, you know, more of a sense of urgency because they need to win to keep pace. And if they win two, they're in. The Ravens, as I said, they're in already, but their chances of, you know, if they wind up falling to that sixth seed, they'll probably have to go to New England or Denver their first round, and they know their chances of winning there aren't that great. So I think they still feel like they need to win. I think that the sense of urgency, the purpose is pretty close. You know, it's just they're two very hard teams to figure out. As you guys know, everyone's been trying to figure out the Giants. You never know what you're going to get with them. And the Ravens, you know, they haven't played that well all year, really, to be honest. They got to 9-2 really by having some good fourth quarters, making some plays down the stretch, and, you know, not putting complete games together, but putting enough of a good game together to win at the end. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, maybe the Giants have the edge because I think their upside this year has been a lot higher than the Ravens, but, you know, who knows with the home crowd. I know the Giants have won big games on the road before, too, so I doubt they're going to be intimidated by really anything that goes on in Baltimore. So, you know, I don't know. It's pretty even. It should be a pretty interesting game because you're talking about two teams that have been very hard to figure out this year.
Jeff Zurebeck of the Baltimore Sun covers the Baltimore Ravens for the paper. Jeff, really appreciate the time and the insights this morning. Thanks so much.
No problem. Have a good week.
You as well. Jeff Zurebeck of the Baltimore Sun giving his thoughts on Sunday's matchup between the Giants and the Ravens and some interesting stuff regarding all of the injuries that Baltimore is dealing with. He talked about how they're really going deep into the depth chart. Similar circumstances to the Giants, but the Giants are not in that same situation. They at least have been able to answer the call with respect to their depth chart. All right, we're going to open back up the lines. 201-939-4513 here on Big Blue Kickoff. Lance Meadow with you. You can chime in on the conversation on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. You can follow and interact with me at Lance Meadow, last name M-E-D-O-W. We start with Ed in Maryland. Ed, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, Lance?
How we doing, Ed?
Doing okay. Just wanted to pick up from where Steve from D.C. was talking about.
Sure.
I totally agree with the NASCAR package. My only years of watching football, I just never got the whole thing with putting a deep end that's long and lengthy like Kiwi or Jason Pierre-Paul, that 6'5", 270 plus inside. Like, just from like a football standpoint, that does not work. Like, you have to have your defensive tackles be able to pass rush. And I was hoping Marvin Knox was going to be that type of guy for us, but he hasn't played most of the season. And as far as the defense goes, we have to I kept saying this to my Giants buddies, we have to blitz more. Like, if the front four isn't doing their steps right, if the pressure isn't getting there, I don't get how it's 3rd and 9, 3rd and long, and, like, almost every game this has happened to us. The Cowboys game, the first game of the season, the Steelers game, last week playing the Falcons, on 3rd and 9 and 3rd and long, we don't get pressure, and the quarterback has all day to throw the ball. And I'm just thinking, like, it's almost like common sense. On 3rd and long, it's easier to send the dog at the quarterback, make him throw the ball quicker, and that way you get them to punt the ball. But it seemed like the whole year, Perry Fields is counting on the front 40 to bring pressure, and it's just not working. We have only like about 30 sacks. And about as far as Justin Tuck, I mean, I think he has like a year left on his deal. But I don't know how he's going to command big dollars when in the past 2 years he only has 8 sacks. And I was also thinking that he shouldn't be the captain no more. Rose is actually more of a vocal leader for the team, and he just stands up for the team more. And I mean, at first I was like last year I was thinking Rose maybe be the captain, but he was only with us like 2 years, so I was like maybe that's too soon. But now this is his third year with us. Antoine Rose should be more of a captain. Justin Tuck, I mean, I still like him, but he just hasn't lived up to that heir apparent to straight in as we all thought he was going to be. Like, even stopping the run, if he's not getting a sack, like, at least stopping the run. But when I watch his game, he doesn't play his gaps well, and he's just not being effective. Then another thing I want to talk about with Eli, this whole either lead talk needs to just please stop. I mean, I'm fine with him being a decent to good quarterback. But if you go back to the past 3 seasons, including this season, he has 56 interceptions with 2 games left to go. So if he keeps this up in these final 2 games, he would average almost 20 picks per season for the last 3 seasons. That's not elite. And Coughlin and Gilbride need to figure out to do something to cut down his turnovers, because I just can't buy he's all great. Yeah, he won the Super Bowls, but the team won the Super Bowl. Eli did not win the Super Bowl on his own. When he wins, it's all him. But when he loses, it's the D-line, it's the running game, it's all this stuff. When we lose, we have to give him some blame, too. Look at the stats this year, 20 TDs and 15 picks. And like every season, Eli cannot, you know, stay under 12 picks or stay under 10 picks. He's always reaching towards 20 picks every single season. So, obviously, something needs to be changed. We can't just keep – I mean, for like a team that won 2 Super Bowls in 4 years, we have – like the standard is higher. So you can't keep having 9-7 seasons, 8-8 seasons, things of that nature. I was thinking, hoping, Coppola was talking about build the bridge, set the bar higher. I was hoping maybe a 10-12 win season at the least. But now it's looking like we're going to miss the playoffs, and win the Super Bowl and then come back next year and miss the playoffs is horrible.
Well, it's certainly not the predicament that they wanted to be in, and Ed, appreciate the phone call, and Ed threw out a lot. I'm just going to briefly touch on some of those topics before we get back to the phone calls. With respect to Eli Manning's interceptions, also keep in mind, the year that he had 25 picks, a lot of them were deflections off of receivers' hands. So you have to look at the number and then digest it and then say, well, maybe 18 of them were really on Eli. If you recall that season, a lot went off of Steve Smith's fingertips and the entire receiving corps, Amani Toomer and so forth. So you can't really put much stock into those interception numbers. And keep in mind also, some of the other top quarterbacks in this league who are Pro Bowl level, Pro Bowl caliber, have big-time interception numbers. Drew Brees has thrown a lot of interceptions over the course of his career. Yes, he's thrown a lot of touchdowns, but if you look at his numbers, the INTs are up there as well. I mean, that's the nature of good quarterbacks. They throw the football a lot, and at times they're going to put the ball in harm's way. So I don't know necessarily if that hurts his status as a quarterback. To me, the elite topic is worn out. I'm tired of it. I don't really think it does anything. It's all about teams having good offenses and as the whole unit winning Super Bowls. Eli Manning has done that. So you need to look at what Eli Manning has done for the team, not necessarily what Eli Manning has done from an individual perspective. That's for the Hall of Fame to decide. That's for the MVP trophies to be given out. That's all well and good. But Giants fans are more concerned about what Eli Manning can do for this team. And he has delivered for this team overall. Has he necessarily delivered this season? No, but it hasn't just been Eli Manning. As I mentioned, it's been the offensive line. It's been the inconsistency of the running game, and it's also been the inconsistency of the defense. It's been a lot of factors that have hurt this team. Eli Manning's one of many. It's not just solely on Eli Manning. But if you're going to look at the Atlanta Falcons game, of course, it's hard to overlook Manning's struggles because this was a game, this was specifically a loss that was on Manning. And real quickly, before we get back to your calls, Ed also threw out Justin Tuck and the whole captain issue where Antrell Roll should be the captain. Those are titles. Antrell Roll could still be a huge vocal leader for this team, even though he doesn't have, quote-unquote, the title or the C on his jersey. It doesn't matter who they give it out to. Tuck has always said he doesn't want to be a vocal leader. It's not like he's hiding that fact. He's made that very clear. Every leader reacts differently and tries to motivate his teammates. Tuck does a lot behind closed doors. He's not going to have it play out in the media. Roll does that. That's why Giants fans and all football fans see what Roll brings to the table. He doesn't mind calling out his teammates. He doesn't mind calling out his opponents. Sometimes that's good. Sometimes that backfires. But the point I'm making is, even though Roll is not the captain, doesn't mean he can't have a positive effect on this team. So to strip Justin Tuck of his C just because he doesn't take it to the degree that Antro Roll does, I mean, that's a meaningless discussion. Now, Roll is not leaving this defense. He can still give this defensive unit a lift. It's all about who the teammates respond to. And at times, they have responded to Roll. Justin Tuck needs to be more focused on bringing his level of play up on the field because he's had his own issues. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We go to Daniel in Virginia. Daniel, what's happening?
I agree with the last caller. I think that Justin Tuck needs to step his game up. I think he's an overrated player. To me, I think O.C. Umeniora should be a starter. I think he's a better player. I think he's a better pass rusher. I think he's better against the run. What do you think?
Well, listen, they all rotate the defensive linemen, and appreciate the phone call, Daniel. So it doesn't really matter at the end of the day who starts and who finishes the game. Perryfield tries to balance out the snaps. You have three top defensive ends. Sitting them on the sidelines is not going to do much. So he does his best to rotate these players in and out. Clearly, you can't just have them all on the field at the same time. I don't really think it makes a difference who's out there to start the game. They each have their individual strengths. But to me, I get back to the linebacker core. And I know a lot of Giants fans and a lot of the calls we've taken have not really brought up this unit as a whole. But that, to me, is the difference makers here. I know you want to see Justin Tuck, OC, and JPP get the sacks and get the quarterback hits. And that's fine, and I think that could very well make a difference. But stopping the run comes down to the linebackers. Those are the guys that need to be aware of their gap assignments. They need to hit the hole harder. They need to be more aggressive. And here's another thing why they've been struggling against the run. It's not just about gap assignments. How many missed tackles were evident in that Falcons game? How many times did they have Michael Turner wrapped up with what should have been a 2 to 3 yard gain, and it became a 5 to 6 to 7 yard gain because he brought multiple defenders with him or nobody could bring him down. So it's not just all about the scheme. It's also about individuals being more physical, playing with pride, playing with that chip on your shoulder. That's been absent the last couple of weeks. And that should be something that needs to be brought back against the Baltimore Ravens. Every Sunday, you want to be the team that makes a statement, not just to the media, but makes a statement to your fellow competitors. And this is a game, to me, that they could be more physical. They should be able to outmuscle this Ravens offensive line. But talking about it and saying you're going to do it is one thing. Executing it on the football field is a whole other. And we've seen that at times throughout the course of this season. It's step-up time. That's the easiest way to lay things out for Sunday. Back to the lines. We've got Jamal in New Mexico. Jamal, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, man? You brought up a good topic. You kind of messed me up with what I wanted to say.
Well, I didn't mean to do that, but what you got?
Well, you know, you talk about the linebacking group. And, you know, last year, you know, we brought in Chase Blackburn towards the middle of the end of the season. And he came in and helped us out a hell of a lot in the linebacker core. But this year, like you said, I don't know if it's due to injuries or whatever it is, but I don't see that same fire and desire that he had when he came off the couch last year, you know. And I was excited when we brought him back because he was a big difference maker for our special teams as well as our defense and linebacker crew. So like you said, the linebackers, I don't see it there, the fire. And like you said, poor tackling, man. I don't understand why we're hitting a 5'8", 260-pound running back up high. I mean, common sense would tell you, you hit him low and take him down low so he can't, so his legs can't keep moving. You know, but I mean, that's just common sense to me. I don't know. I'm not playing out there. My question was, is Kevin Gilbride open to being creative? Because to me, it seems like he's willing to be stubborn and stick with a play call and his play calling, which I know some coaches are willing to do to make sure the shot is going to work. But I feel like with David Wilson, We're so worried about him pass blocking for Eli, making sure he's making the pass block. But is there any way we can be creative and have him chip block and maybe go out for a pass or put him on a one-on-one with a linebacker? Because we got to utilize that speed. And running him in between the guard and tackles is not the best way to utilize his speed effectively. I want to know, do you think Kevin Gilbride's open to using that or to doing something like that with Wilson?
Jamal, thanks for the phone call, and it's an intriguing question that you did bring up. A lot of people questioning Kevin Gilbride's play calling. Gilbride has that creative factor, but keep this in mind. Eli Manning has a lot of flexibility when it comes to digesting what he is told through his headset and then maybe changing up the play, and also he has multiple options on a given play. So a play that Kevin Gilbride is calling for may involve David Wilson getting a pass out in the flat or looking for a favorable matchup on the linebacker, and instead of dropping it off, and we've discussed this at great length throughout the course of this season, Manning oftentimes is going to look to maybe take the home run or look up the field, and that's not the smartest decision. And even Manning admitted that yesterday. He said there were times in the Falcons game where he probably should have went for the first option or the conservative option as opposed to looking down the field. So I don't necessarily think it falls on Kevin Gilbride's play calling and his inability to adjust. It's more so what Eli Manning is thinking in the huddle and what he is ultimately deciding to do. It's basically a balance between the offensive coordinator and the quarterback. They have a lot of confidence in Eli. That's why Kevin Gilbride is not going to go to Eli and say, this is the play, this is what you're going to do, and that's the end of the story. No, he's going to say, this is the play, but if you feel you have a better option down the field, take it, because we have trusted Eli Manning. The relationship between an offensive coordinator and a quarterback is integral in terms of how smooth an offense runs. Look at the Ravens, for example. Cam Cameron and Joe Flacco reportedly did not have a very good relationship. That's why they made a change, and clearly the Ravens' offense struggled as a result. They brought in Jim Caldwell. Perhaps they'll now reap the benefits of a new scheme, and that's going to come with time. But the Giants are not looking to change coordinators. They're not looking to change personnel. Can they utilize David Wilson more as a receiver? Absolutely. The wisest thing the Giants did coming out of the bye, they got the running backs involved in the passing game. Remember that screen play against the Green Bay Packers, the dump off to Ahmad Bradshaw? He almost took it to the house. That's the type of offense that the Giants can showcase week to week. But it's all about having patience and confidence in your running backs and putting them in open space and good at getting good blocking down the field. Here's a topic that nobody talks about quite often. The Giants are very good in blocking up the field with their receivers. Amani Toomer, Plexico Burress, you go back all the way. They have always tried to bring in receivers that are not just about catching passes and making big plays with their arms and legs, but sacrificing their bodies to give extra leverage to the running backs. Hakeem Nicks, Victor Cruz, Dominic Hickson, Martellus Bennett. They can block at the line. They have the ability to run screen plays. It's not as if they don't have the right personnel, but it's a matter of them sticking to that type of scheme. There was a glimpse of it after the bye when they had 2 weeks to reevaluate the offense. All of a sudden, things have dropped off lately, and they're not going back to that screen game. Perhaps they'll start to see if we get David Wilson into open space and we get Ahmad Bradshaw into open space, not just on the ground, but in the passing game, that could help jump start this offense. And that is something that I thought was a huge positive against the Green Bay Packers. That's why that offense clicked so well. Then you look at the game since, the screen pass has not been a huge part of the offense. So if Wilson can get matched up with a linebacker, if he can even get matched up with a corner, he's got the speed to win individual battles. Let's get back to the lines. 201-939-4513. We go to Mark in East Orange. Mark, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, man? Hey, so what you was just saying about the screen pass, that is so true. Because back in the day when Tiki Barber was playing, we used to do a lot of screen passes, and it was very effective. And it's like past couple of years, we haven't been using that at all. So that is one of the main things on offense that we need to start putting more into the playbook. But, yeah, my whole thing is that, you know, I had a call last week, and, you know, I was telling you about the offensive line. You know, David Dale and, you know, with Sean going down, man, that was a big killer for us, man. Because if you look at David Dale, he lost his step, man. You know, it's 10 years. This is last year on his contract, man. He's looking sloppy, man. I don't know what's going on. And it's crazy because they took Capers off the Giants depth chart just to sign a cornerback.
Well, but they were without Prince Amukamara, Mark. They needed the depth there. Think about it. It's a mix and match situation. You need to go where there's the most injuries.
Yeah, I know, and that's another thing that really killed us. And you know, with those injuries, that definitely killed us. It definitely did, because with Prince gone, I used to always, you know, talk about his game a little bit, the way how he play off a lot. And it's crazy because I see a difference when he's not on the field, and then when the rookie filling in for him, everything was just messed up because only seeing one play out of the rookie, you know, Holmesley, he only did one good play. You know, he broke up a pass. But after that, it was like two plays where he got burnt. And I was like, oh, my God. And you know, the injuries, you know, with Kenny Phillips gone, that's big to us too. And it's like, really, this year, injuries killed us. And, you know, I don't know what's going on with the defensive line. It's like miscommunication everywhere. I don't know. You know, I know Pierre Paul is injured. Tuck, you know, he's walking around like he's injured, and it's like it's not him. Usually they are good tacklers. Tuck and Pierre Paul, they're good tacklers. You know, OC, he's mainly a rusher. But, you know, but I don't know what to say about the defensive line, man. It's crazy because, you know, last week I said that, you know, the Giants, we're going to beat them. We're going to beat Atlanta. They're not really elite, or basically a qualified, you know, team with 11-2 record. You know, and it's crazy because everybody's communication was off. You know, the injuries, everything was messed up for us. And they just really exploit our defense.
All right, Mark, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much. And the defensive line, the inconsistency of it, has been very mind-boggling for this team. And they've been trying to work each and every week to get these players in the best position to succeed. It just, unfortunately, has not worked. And I understand Giants fans are skeptical that all of a sudden they're going to pull a 180 and the sacks are going to stockpile in the last two games despite the favorable matchups. It may happen. It may not happen. But you're not going to bench Justin Tuck. You're not going to bench JPP, and you're not going to bench OC Umanyora, because those are your best pass rushers. Those are your best options. And as far as missed tackling is concerned, it's not just those three. It's across the board. It's the corners, it's the safeties, it's the linebackers. You've got to spread the blame here. You can't just put it all on the front four. Everybody has had opportunities to be in a position to make a tackle, and everybody has had issues in that department. So that is something that they need to straighten out, not just in one facet of this defense, but in all three facets. And Prince Amukamara's injury did affect the defense. You can't overlook that. Jaron Hosley, though, let's remember, he's not just a rookie that's coming off the bench and they're throwing him to the wolves. He had experience earlier this season because Prince Amukamara was hurt. And he has experience out of the slot, and he has experience on the outside. He was beat by Harry Douglas a couple of times. They had some big plays at Atlanta. But if you're going to say that the return of Prince Amukamara is all of a sudden going to solve this defense, I'm not necessarily buying that. Same thing could be said for Ahmad Bradshaw's return, that's going to all of a sudden solve the offense. It's not as if they were missing five players from each side. You miss one, yes, it's a void that you have to fill. And if you're putting in a player, regardless of his experience, he doesn't nearly have as much playing time as a Prince Amukamara, and he's not getting nearly as many reps in practice. So that clearly takes an effect. But it's one thing to have some defensive miscues and issues in the first quarter. It's another issue to have it come back in the third and the fourth quarter. Adjustments need to be made throughout the course of a game. And that falls on both the players and the coaching staff. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We go to Jay in Virginia. Jay, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on? I just wanted to make a couple of comments about this team and how we've seen things like this before and how we can't always hang our hat on being in these situations because every year is different. And Wilson, he can run the ball up the middle and to the outside like we've seen the Browns game. He took the ball right up the middle on 30, 40 yards for the touchdown 2 weeks ago. He takes the swing pass, the pitch pass or play, whatever, that they love to give him to the house. So he can make all the runs when he gets his opportunities. We just need a healthier, more consistent offensive line. And we've seen this team overcome two interception games by Eli with New Orleans, and then we've also lost two interception games thrown by Eli. So the inconsistency of the team is really what's getting us right now. And I think with our backs being up against the wall and a chance that we can still win our division will probably, you know, wake guys up. And, yeah, we've been in this situation before, but we got to do something about it now. What are your thoughts on something like that?
All right, appreciate the phone call, Jay. And you're right. They do have all of the factors that can play out in their favor to get a playoff spot. But remember, they no longer control their own destiny with respect to the division. The Redskins and the Cowboys are in the driver's seat compared to the Giants. But the Giants win both games. They've got a wild card. They don't need to worry about that. But the reason I question that back-against-the-wall mentality, I think they had that situation somewhat entering this Falcons game. They knew that if they win, they still control their own destiny regarding the division. And then they came out, and look at how they performed. So you wonder, you've got another situation heading into the Ravens game where now you need to win to at least salvage your playoff hopes. How is this team going to answer the call? I thought they were going to answer the call against Atlanta. To me, on paper, that game spelled out perfectly for the Giants because of the caliber of talent. Also, the fact that the game was on the road, where the Giants tend to excel more so than at home, but this year it's kind of reverse. You can make the argument they've done better at home than they've done on the road. Those two factors alone, I thought, would help the Giants really answer the call and make a statement against the Atlanta Falcons. It didn't work out that way. Now, again, you're in a similar circumstance against the Baltimore Ravens, a team that's hurting, a team that is struggling itself, has lost three in a row. This should be a game where the Giants feel the pressure a little bit. I'm sure Tom Coughlin, who's very good at painting the picture for them on Saturday night, will spell it out. And given how they've performed under these circumstances in the past, it could very well turn out positively for the Giants. They've got that track record to fall back on. But the difference between last season and this season, as I've laid out more often than not on this program, has been they had a hurt defensive line last year. So OC came back right at the perfect time to help rejuvenate the line, get the pass rush moving, and then they rode that. That's not in play this season. Hakeem Nicks was fully healthy last season. That's not in play this season, and he's not getting any healthier over the next two games. Victor Cruz was the new guy on the block last season. That's no longer in play. Defenses are honing in on him. You see the point I'm making. There's a lot of factors that were working in favor of the Giants last season that are not on the table this season. Now, that doesn't mean that they don't have a lot going right for them. They still have plenty of talent. But that's why I shy away from holding up one season to the other and saying, well, the Giants did this last year, so they can easily turn it up a notch when they need it the most this year. All right, we're going to try to squeeze in a couple of more calls here. I thought maybe John Schmelk would make an appearance, give us his nuggets against the Baltimore Ravens, but that may not happen, so we'll try to ride a few more callers before we call it a show here. Let's go to Randy in Virginia. Randy, what you got?
Don't worry about John Schmelk. He's a slacker. No, I haven't called since week one when we lost to the Cowboys, and, you know, I think about it. Here we go again. I don't think, like the last caller said, this isn't a situation that we want to, you know, find ourselves accustomed to. It's good to know that when we are backed up against the wall that we can overcome some adversity and pull it all together. But I was thinking about the approach of the pass to set up the run. Right now, no one is really threatened or concerned about our running game. And so, therefore, one of the things that we really hang our hat on in the passing game, the play action, is not effective. There's a player on offense and defense that I really think we should be calling on to set up. On offense, I'm wondering about Reuben Randall. He's shown some good signs here and there. You know, you have players queuing in on, you know, Nicks and you have players queuing in on Salsa Man. but last year when they started doing that, it really started, you know, with the 49ers in the NFC Championship game. And we had Manningham step up on a couple of them, although we did have like 12 passes to Cruz during that time. I really think that Reuben Randall needs to step up. And then on defense, Jaquan Williams, I know he's just getting his feet wet again, but with his athleticism, just to kind of caddy off of one of the callers said earlier, if we could send one more guy who can get there. I mean, you know, people have been giving, you know, the NASCAR package personnel a hard time, but truth of the matter is I've seen JPP get double teamed and sometimes even triple teamed.
Absolutely.
And, you know, which isn't saying much for the other guys, but, you know, OC, he always seems to be a split second away. But if we can disrupt the pattern of the play calling, you know, send someone like Jaquan, he's shown that he can really do some things when you send him on a blitz. I think that could really open up things. The three safety look, this is my last point, man. The three safety look, I think it still has potential even if we have a Will Hill back there. But this last part's actually a question.
Sure.
What has been y'all's feel as far as how the defense is, the defensive personnel are reacting to Perry Fuel's play calling? Do they seem to still have confidence there?
I don't think that they have lost confidence at all, and appreciate the phone call, Randy, as I'll piggyback off of some of the points that you brought up. I don't see any signs of them losing faith in Perry Fuel's scheme. There is no issue between the coaching staff and the defensive players. I think that they're still confident. They've shown that they can bounce back after some unfortunate performances on their part in terms of lacking consistency. So I don't think that's come up at all in meetings or even throughout the media. There's no signs of any of the players questioning the scheme, questioning where Perry Fuel places guys. And I think, if anything, Perry Fuel has done a good job defending his players. And I bring up the Saints game as an example when he says, listen, I didn't put guys in the right position to get sacks, as opposed to saying, we need better production from the secondary or we need better production from the linebackers. He's the last coach that you'll see that's going to start pointing out individuals and starting to criticize them. So there's no issue at all between the players and the coaching staff, and I don't see that coming to the forefront at all throughout the next two games. Regarding Jaquan Williams, that gets back to the point that I brought up earlier. A lot of people questioning the defensive line. I still think it falls on the linebackers to really make a difference in this defensive unit moving forward. And Jaquan Williams, as Randy just touched on, he's their most versatile linebacker. He can stop the run. They can drop him back in coverage. He can run sideline to sideline. He can shadow a running back. He can shadow a quarterback. Unfortunately, he's been hurt for the bulk of this season, and they have not been able to utilize him in different schemes. He's slowly getting his legs back under him, getting that knee back to full force, and perhaps that will help them moving forward, specifically in stopping a guy like Ray Rice this coming week, who I expect the Ravens to really ride. And not just on the ground, but they'll use Ray Rice in open space through screens. Keep in mind, Baltimore had a situation against San Diego earlier this year. It was a 4th-and-29, and somehow Ray Rice got a short screen play on the right side, ran right to left, left to right, and managed to get that first down. He's a crafty running back. You're going to need fast linebackers to tie him up and contain him. So that is going to be certainly a critical player that could make a difference on Sunday. Let's try to squeeze in one more call here. We got Leo in New Jersey. Leo, what's happening?
Hey, how's it going, boss?
Doing well, Leo. What you got?
You know, my take on it, first off, I'm really starting to get, you know, pissed off on you know, especially the main captains like Tuck. Tuck, after every time we lose, I still got my confidence. We don't got to worry. We've been in the position before. You heard what JPP said after the game. He's getting tired of hearing it, which I agree 100%. It's a whole new season. I'm a diehard Giants fan, and I will always celebrate my 4th Super Bowl ring. But that's, you know, enough's enough. You know, now you're in a whole different ball game now. And people, even though, you know, the Ravens haven't been playing good ball the past couple weeks, doesn't mean you sleep on them. people tend to forget they could have been in the Super Bowl with us last season. Ray Lewis might be back. That's definitely a boost for them. We cannot sleep on the Ravens. We need Eli to really, really focus in this one. We need to develop our running game. Hopefully Bradshaw will be fine, which I think he'll be fine. You know, I want to hear somebody. I want to hear you, if you can.
Well, I can't speak for the players, Leo, but I'm listening.
Yeah, of course not for the players, but, you know.
All right, we seem to have lost Leo, but the point that clearly he was trying to make was that he wants to see more urgency out of the players, especially after a loss, so that they can utilize something to build off of it. Listen, they have every right to still be confident despite the rough performance against the Atlanta Falcons. They still control their own destiny. Why shouldn't a team feel confident under those circumstances? Two wins and you're in the playoffs. So I can't fault the players for saying, well, we've been in this situation before. We can go back to last season. I understand where they're coming from. And I also understand why Giants fans are frustrated because of the up and down performance. But there's still plenty of hope, and deservedly so. Two games, two wins. The wild card at worst is theirs. And that's still a very good position to be in. And I can't fault the Giants players for looking at it from that perspective.
You're still blabbing?
We're still blabbing. Well, we were trying to milk the show
10:50.
As long as possible. We did get plenty of calls.
Okay.
We had the interview.
The phones work, by the way?
The phones, thankfully, knock on wood, do work.
Excellent.
So you did your magic with the help of others.
Okay.
And we're hoping that we have it smooth the rest of the way. But we also could not close out the show. How could we close out Big Blue Kickoff on a Tuesday morning?
I don't have that many nuggets.
Without John Schmoke's nuggets.
All right, well, here we go. You're ready for some nuggets?
I am ready.
I'm going to try to rapid fire
some of these. I've waited long enough.
All right, well, obviously they made the move from Cameron to Caldwell.
Correct.
Last week. A couple reasons for that. Flacco was apparently a little frustrated. They didn't use a no-huddle enough. And the run-pass ratio wasn't exactly ideal. 503 passes, a 353 runs so far this year, which is a pretty stark pass-run ratio, especially when your best player on offense is your running back. So I'm sure that had something to do with it. Of course, then again, last week, Ray Rice only had 12 carries, so you could take that with a grain of salt.
They were also playing from behind in that situation.
Very true, and I know people have been killing their defense. Defense not that bad against Denver last week. They only gave up 7 points on defense.
One pick was returned for a touchdown by Denver,
exactly.
So that did help them.
And a lot of short fields as well in terms of turnover. So you have that. They're 9-5, obviously, first place in the NFC North. Three-game losing streak, first one ever after under Harbaugh. 20-3 at home under Harbaugh, and their wins are averaging 30 points per game. They're 31st in the NFL in time of possession. They have not held the ball much this year, so that perhaps something the Giants can take advantage of moving on here. Let's see. Again, I don't have a whole lot on these guys, Lance. I got to be honest
with
you.
Well, they've been decimated by injuries on defense. That's why there's not a lot of nuggets.
That's the thing. On defense, and I'll jump there next. I mean, I can go through some of these offensive guys. You know, Pita is really the receiving tight end. He's picked up a lot of the slack here. You know, Bolden's their intermediate short guy, but he doesn't have a lot of speed anymore.
He's had a couple of big games recently.
He has. Torrey Smith can get deep, but he's not good at running those other routes. He's not a real tight, specific route runner. Their offensive line has been leaky at best. That's been some of the reason for Flacco's problems. He's been getting hit a lot. Yanda, their Pro Bowl guard, he missed the game last week with a high ankle sprain. He's missed, I think, 4 straight weeks now. So they hope to get him back against the Giants. We'll wait and see about that. And you're right. On defense, they've been an absolute mess, especially at the linebacker position. Their linemen have actually been healthy on the defensive line. They've been okay. Nata, Cody, Jones, those guys play most of the snaps down there. But at linebacker, you're right. They've been an absolute mess. McClellan is listed as a starting outside linebacker. He's had to move inside. Kruger and Suggs are the starting outside linebacker. Suggs not only is coming playing with that Achilles coming back, he also tore his triceps. So that's been a problem. He's been in physical pain coming in and out of games. Rookie Courtney Upshaw has not given the pass rush production that they would have liked. He's been pretty good against the run. And in their secondary, they lost Ladarius Webb, obviously, for the season. They got their first-round pick from last year, Jimmy Smith, back recently. They're trying to work him back in the secondary. Veteran Corey Graham is playing some of the best football of his career at one cornerback spot. He's played pretty well. Kerry Williams is an okay player. Ed Reed's lost a step. He's actually playing every game this year, which is really an upset when you think about it. And Pollard, their other safety, has been playing with bad ribs all week, all year, and he didn't play last week for the first time. And, you know, he's known as a physical thumping safety, and he has not been able to do that with those bad ribs. So, as you mentioned, a lot of injuries on defense. And look, they've for four players on IR, it's just they've had a lot of problems, you know, stopping on defense. That being said, they're ranked 25th in the league in terms of yards allowed, but they are good at certain things. They're 11th in the league in takeaways, second in the league in red zone defense, third in the league, I believe, allowing teams only a 37% third down conversion percentage. So there are individual things that they are good at, even though their overall numbers might not be fantastic.
And just real quickly, those numbers also are areas that the Giants have struggled in
correct.
Terms of red zone efficiency and third down, so that could maybe be a slight advantage for Baltimore.
And really, where they've had struggles with the big plays, they've given up 47 passes of over 20 yards, 8 rushes of over 20 yards. They've been susceptible to big plays. They have not had their usual pass rush punch, which has hurt them. Ray Lewis, eligible to come off of the IR list, the temporary IR list, excuse me, this week. But he has a torn biceps. That's usually a 4 to 6 month injury. It's only been 8 weeks. So.
And if Suggs is not healthy yet with a similar injury, what makes you think Lewis is going to be
affected? I don't think he's, even if he plays, he's not going to be affected. They clinched the playoff spot. Wouldn't you want to rest him and try to get him healthy these next 2 weeks and get him ready for the playoffs? That's what I would try to do. They've allowed 104 100-yard rushers this year. So, look, they're susceptible. To me, this is pretty simple for the Giants this week. You want to try to get a lead early so you can take Ray Rice out of the game. And the Giants' defense has played well this year when they've had a lead and they're able to go after the passer. Ravens' offensive line has struggled. That's what you want to do. And on defense, you have to stop Ray Rice, because otherwise, the Ravens will just pound it and pound it and pound it. We mentioned that they're next to last in the league in time of possession. If you stop Ray Rice, you keep that trend going. And then all of a sudden on offense, if you have a lead, you can run the football. The Ravens have struggled against the run. Run it. Run it. They get turnovers. If you run the ball 30, 35 times, the chance of getting turnovers is lessened because Eli Manning isn't throwing it as much into that secondary where you have one of the best ball-hawking players in the history of the NFL, Ed Reed, back there. Step slow, sure, but he's still great at forcing those turnovers. So, Lance, get a lead, run the football, stop the run. You'll have a chance to go after Flacco. And the Giants should be okay, but this is not an easy game. This is not, you know, the Jets last year where they might self-destruct and help you win a football game. The Giants are going to have to go out there and play well to beat the Ravens. They've lost 2 straight at home, the first time they've done that. 3 straight, period. They're going to go out.
Since 2005.
They are going to play well in this game. They're going to play well. The Giants are going to have to match that to get that win.
And speaking, you know, earlier about the fact that the Ravens mentally are in a bad place, they're still hungry to wrap up that division. So
yeah.
Even though they've, you know, solidified their playoff spot, doesn't mean that they want to at least get a home game come the postseason. So Baltimore still has a lot of factors that they need to decide and a lot of motivational factors too in play to really get them to snap this skid. And you know, John Harbaugh is being questioned, Ozzie Newsome the GM, in terms of the decisions. They're in a state of influx right now, but I still think they're going to come out and play their best football Sunday against the Giants.
Nice Jets pick last night, by the way.
Yeah, I know, don't even get me. And by the way, one quick note, because I really don't want to
Chris
talk
Johnson,
about the Jets.
Chris Johnson, 94-yard touchdown run, that's what you call fantasy gold, by the way.
Well, Mark Sanchez is a whole other topic. We don't have enough time to talk about Mark Sanchez on this show.
Not gold.
One player that we didn't talk about, I know we'll probably get into this on Friday, Jacoby Jones. They've got a very good special teams unit.
And here's the thing. If Torrey Smith, who left last week with a concussion, is unable to play this week, we'll see. Bernard Pierce, too, their backup running back, left with a concussion. Then Jacoby Jones might have to start a wide receiver, and you might see his impact on special teams lessened a little bit if he's to take more snaps at wide receiver. So that'll be something you can keep an eye on.
So too. You're essentially saying that you don't want Torrey Smith to pass his baseline test. That's what the goal is for the Giants this
week.
Well,
I mean, obviously, if
so Jacoby Jones can line up as receiver. No, I just
clearly,
make it clear. It,
I mean, obviously, if I'm not rooting for injuries or someone well, to have permanent head trauma, but obviously it is beneficial to the Giants if another team's starting wide receiver is not on the field. Jacoby Jones, the number one kick returner in football,
correct.
3 touchdowns, 32.5-yard average. That guy's a weapon.
There's one positive.
Let's go.
No, well, this is what I'm going to wrap
up
the show with, okay, that Giants fans should be happy about. The one player that they don't have to worry about this week.
Harry Douglas?
There we go. That should sum it up. No Harry Douglas on the football field this week.
Yeah, they really only use three wide receivers, so there isn't really like a fourth wideout that I can pick out here to kind of make. I guess Dennis Pita would be the guy that you kind of.
But he doesn't fall into the Harry Douglas classification.
Tandon Doss doesn't get me excited.
No.
No, he doesn't.
Jacoby Jones is the only other weapon that they can bring into the receiving game.
Yeah.
Everybody else hasn't really had much of an opportunity. And that's a positive.
There you go.
All right, well, Anita Marks and Paul DeTino will take you the next 2 days here on Big Blue Kickoff.
Correct.
John Schmelk and I will be back on Friday morning. We'll be joined by Pat Hanlon, so that should be a bowl of fun as always.
Oh, yeah, always.
So a lot to preview throughout the upcoming week here on Giants.com. Keep it here. Big Blue Kickoff on every morning, 9:30 to 10:30. It is all brought to you by Andrew Mark. For John Schmelk, I'm Lance Meadow. Have a good one. We'll see you later in the week.